Hi, I'm Tracy.
I'm April.
And this is Killer Spirits.
Welcome to episode 31, everyone.
Episode 31, welcome.
Hi, I keep eating my garnish on my drink today.
It's delicious.
It's a snack.
I love a snack with a drink,
you know? I do too, and this is definitely a snack with a drink. This whole drink is a snack, actually.
Yeah, you're kind of right.
I like it. It's really good. I'm excited for you to talk about it. And also, they are being served today in our beautiful cocktailware that I got from Etsy.
Vintage.
I think I've said that before, but
original.
If you're looking for some fun cocktail glasses and you don't really want to go around to different thrift shops because you never know what you can
hunting,
find.
Yeah.
Yeah, go to Etsy. There's some really cute stuff on there and it's really inexpensive.
Mm-hmm. Especially compared to like if you're going to buy new like Nick and Nora glasses.
Mm-hmm.
They're like $35.
Yeah.
Each sometimes.
Well, if you're bougie, that's all you buy. Like my parents.
You're bougie. We don't that's even like, have one, I don't think.
No, we're not as bougie enough yet.
Uh-uh.
I think it, yet. I don't know if it comes with age or what.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But this drink is really good. I'm excited for you to talk about
Thanks.
It. How are you? How was your week?
It was good.
Yeah. It was fast. Here we are. I'll tell the world. Got my second vaccine shot.
Hey.
Yeah.
It, I've got zero vaccine shots.
Well, you will.
I'm safe from
you. Or you won't if you decide not to, but I did decide to do it.
We'll see how convenient it is. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm just kind of glad that that part's over, and I'm excited that I was able to do that.
Yeah, you're like free.
Well, almost.
I mean, technically, you don't have to wear a mask even.
Well, technically, but I think it's after a few weeks.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it's like 10 days.
Yeah, it hasn't been a few weeks yet, I don't think. Oh. But anyway, that's the most exciting thing that's happened in my week.
I feel drained from this week.
How come?
I had a short deadline.
Oh, the work.
And I had taken some vacation days. And I had took a sick day.
Wow, look at you.
Wink, sick day.
Shh.
My boss, she doesn't care. She already knows.
Oh, okay.
She knows that if I, like, text in sick in the middle of the week, I'm probably not sick. I didn't feel good, but I could have gone to work.
Yeah, but some of the times those days are just like, you just can't do it.
Yeah. And then I kind of screwed myself because I put myself up against a hard deadline with less amount of time to complete my
Oh, so there's your own fault.
Work.
I actually was sick this week because the shot really threw me on my butt. But it was only like 24 hours. And then after that, I was like, boop, I'm done.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's in my opinion, worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would think like just the solace of knowing like you're not going to die. Like, yeah, I'm sick, but I'm not gonna die, so what does it matter?
Right. And it doesn't and it's not as bad as, you know, getting like actual COVID. It's just, you know, you get a low grade fever, you get some chills, you want to go to bed, and that's all you do, and then you're done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for some people, they get nothing. They have no symptoms at all.
That's true.
I know, which is
some people got COVID and had no symptoms.
I know, that's just wild to me.
Wild. Because if you have no symptoms, you're not getting tested, so how do we even know who that was?
Some people did get tested
with no
symptoms. Because maybe they were in contact with somebody mm-hmm. who did have it, and they're like, "Oh, I'll just get tested just in case, but I don't have it because I'm not sick."
I did that,
and then it came out positive, and they're like, "What?"
It's weird.
Yeah, I know it's kind of wild, but
I think I've been tested like 3 times. Oh no, that's not true.
You've been tested.
I've been tested
more.
A lot.
I never even got tested once.
I did the nose tested like
those,
3 times.
Those are bad,
really bad. But the one they gave us at work was the oral test. But I did that every week for a while.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Because I was going into the office.
Yeah. Which was the reason that I could hang out with you.
Yeah. I mean, well, and if I wasn't going in the office to get tested, I was home.
That's true.
So
you didn't go anywhere.
It didn't really matter.
True. All right, enough of COVID
speak. Oh my
gosh,
blah, blah, blah,
talk
COVID.
About cocktails.
Cocktails. No, that was just my like circle back to I am tired today.
Oh yeah, that's right. She's tired.
And I like wanted to get up early and clean the house and it just didn't happen. And
mm-hmm.
You know how it goes.
Oh, I do know how it goes.
100%. We had to go pick up the dog at like 10 o'clock last night.
They have the cute... Oh, I'm sorry. I just looked at the puppy.
Very cute.
They have the cutest puppy. He's like a miniature shepherd. Australian shepherd. Yes.
It's my brother-in-law's dog.
The cutest little puppy I've ever seen. And blue eyes and just so soft and sweet. And now I want one.
He's a little pea breed.
Oh my gosh, I love him so much. I'm going to take him home.
But yeah, they let us know kind of late that they needed us to watch him. So we went over there late.
That's nice of you. I think that's so amazing that you were able running to do on that. Fumes.
I mean, hey, you can't really leave a dog in an apartment
for no, days. No, no, no. Especially itself. That cute little cutie.
Yeah. Well, and he was any all kind cutie, of really. Like, I think he slept good last night. He didn't wake us up at all. And even this morning when we woke up, you know, usually dogs are like straight to the door, like straight yeah. outside. I need to go. He was just kind of like, hey, guys.
You should post a picture of him on our Instagram. He's so cute.
Okay.
People will trust me and be like, oh, she's right. He is cute.
He is cute. It's true.
All right.
Okay. So today's drink is called the Golden Almond.
It's got gold leaf on it, yo.
It has gold leaf on it. After the Golden State, which is California, which is where our story takes place. And also the almond, because California is the world's largest producer of almonds.
Did I ever tell you the story about when I was in FFA and I had a teacher who called him Ammons?
But I didn't
know what that meant for like 6 months.
You're like, what's an Ammon?
I didn't know Ammon, but people call them Ammons. So this could be an Ammon drink.
A golden Ammon?
I was 14. I didn't know.
I mean. So, yeah, fun fact. California produces 80% of the world's almonds.
Wow.
That's a lot.
I used to live on an almond orchard too.
You did?
Yes. Hmm. Before we moved to where we currently are.
Did it smell really good?
I don't recall it smelling really good, but I remember the trees were really beautiful and I could just run around maniacally. I was like 9.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. It was way before you were born. Way before.
So this drink has, for 2 drinks, I did 2 ounces of amaretto. For that almond delicious flavor. 2 ounces of Kahlua, which gives it like a little, I don't know, it's almost like an almond latte.
Yeah, I would say
cocktail.
That.
Mm-hmm. And then 3 ounces of milk. I use 1% milk. You could also use half and half if you want to like richen it up a little bit.
I think it would be good with half and half.
Yeah, I agree. Or heavy cream. It's totally up to you. Mm-hmm. And then the rim is honey, which I think was a good touch. We found recipes that had corn syrup. But we didn't have corn syrup, so we used honey, and I think I like it.
I actually really like
it, I like it better than I would have liked corn syrup.
And then what you did is you put a little bit of honey on the side, mm-hmm. rolled it half the glass mm-hmm. in the almonds dust, mm-hmm. and then put it in the freezer for about 5 minutes just to harden it up, yes. make sure it stayed.
And it chilled the glass down.
Yeah, it was great. A nice
touch. So it's a little snack.
Yeah.
And a cocktail.
I'm already done with it.
and then I just floated some pieces of gold leaf on the top just to make it
golden.
Extra gorgeous.
Extra golden.
It's very pretty. So yeah, it's not vampire-esque as last episode.
That was a fun drink though.
It was. It was delicious.
Yeah, so today we are on part 2 of The Vampire Killer. Mm-hmm. So if you have not listened to part 1, make sure you go listen to it.
Back it up.
But just back it up right now, boop, okay?
Boop, boop. Go listen to part 1.
Yeah, you'll need to listen to part 1, I think, because it's the lead up to everything.
Okay. Here's the thing is that part 1's so creepy and weird and gross. And I won't say nothing's happened yet, but the main part hasn't happened yet. And it still creeps me out.
Yes. No, it is very creepy.
Like, I left last week being like, what the fuck? Like, weird. And we're going camping next weekend.
Oh, out in the world?
Up the coast, yeah. On Friday night? We're staying in a hotel the next 2 nights. But
just one tent night.
Yes.
I got it.
So, I haven't been camping, I don't know, years. And if I do, I always sleep in my car.
Oh.
I do like car camping.
Yeah.
I don't do a tent and all that business.
Seems safer.
But we're doing a tent this time. And I was thinking like, but like, how do I lock us in?
You don't.
I can't. We're just.
You're just out there in the world. That's what I said. That's why I said out there in the world.
So I'm taking bear mace. So don't fuck with us. You will get maced.
I feel like I'm less scared of bears than other creepy
things. It's not for bears. It's for humans.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
Yeah. A bear mace could definitely take you down.
See, this is what happens when you start doing too much research.
That's what I'm saying.
Everywhere you go, you're like,
blah. No, this podcast has made me like, I mean, I was already kind of like, not hypervigilant, but aware.
Now you're extra hyper.
Now I'm extra aware.
I know. Like, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. And then the other caveat I do want to give.
I don't want to die.
No. Well, no. God, no.
I don't want to get eaten.
You're not going to, any of those things are going to happen. This story today, It is very graphic. So I think I might even put a little blip in our, you know, description just so everyone knows.
Which may attract or
detract.
Yeah, or detract people.
Which is fine. If it was me, just because I'm a morbid ass, I'd be like, "Ooh, yeah, I'm listening to this one." Mm. But, you know, there is children involved, so I am telling you that. Okay. And also, I'm going to go pretty deeply into just a lot of graphic things.
Okay.
So I just like to tell people that because they might be like bye. Your auntie, my mother, says my soul can't take it. And then they just skip ahead. And that's fine. Aww. That's fine. So again, I just want to talk about my source. I used a book called The Vampire of Sacramento, The True Story of Richard Chase, the Bloodthirsty Cannibal. And it's by Genevieve Ortiz. And also Murderpedia. Murderpedia is really good. It's got some good pictures on there too of this. So I don't know. Go check it out if you want to.
Sometimes they're a little wild.
Yeah,
but sometimes they have good info.
Yeah, because they pull from a lot of different sources, and that part I kind of like. All right, so you remember back in part one, travel back there for a minute. He was in Pyramid Lake.
Oh, yeah.
And then he returned naked
with the blood on him.
Yes, and then he returned home to Sacramento. Okay, they let him out of jail because they didn't – it was animal stuff.
It's not really a crime.
They didn't find any – yeah, no human blood or anything.
Besides
that
you're, like, naked out there.
Besides that he's a big fat creep, like, lewd, at that point. Yeah.
Lewd behavior.
Right. So on October 1st, 1977, after returning home from Pyramid Lake, Richard went on down to the SPCA and bought a dog for $15.99, which you probably know where this is going because we talked a lot about this in our last episode. He kept going back every few days, and he would, of course, answer newspaper ads for puppies. And we know what he was doing with the puppies and the dogs.
Yeah.
He even stole a dog from a family who lived in the same complex as he did. And when they placed an ad in the paper about their missing dog, he actually called and harassed them and told them he knew what happened to their dog. And then basically told them in disgusting detail what he had done to the dog.
Why?
But not – okay, so he did all of this like in this high-pitched, scratchy, weird, screechy voice. But he also told one of the children who answered the phone in the house this.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, so he would take the dogs home to his apartment. He would kill them, hang their bodies in order to drain the blood, and then he drank the blood and he ate their flesh and their organs raw. Yeah, your face says it all, April.
It's just I'm disgusted.
It's disgusting. Yeah. So his parents at this point thought he was doing pretty good. Because remember, his mom and dad had divorced and they lived separately.
Right. And they weren't allowed in his apartment anymore, right?
No. They weren't really allowed in his apartment, but they thought, oh, you know, he was talking about getting a job again. You know, this whole thing that he does. Right. So at Christmas time, his dad took him out shopping and he chose a nice orange ski parka. And he also bought himself a little present around this time, another gun.
Great.
Yeah. So in Christmas 1977, Richard was acting, you know, as normal as Richard could be acting. He was dressed better. His hygiene was better. And I mean, he was kind of at the top of one of his flows here, you know, though the ebb is never far behind.
Right.
You know, it's just one of those things. Because I've noticed that about him. He just kind of ebbed and flowed. Yeah. So Grandma Holly came from LA for Christmas and she thought Richard was doing pretty good finally. He even asked her about her dog. Isn't that nice? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Grandma Holly, that's not good. He was asking about your dog. So Grandma, of course, bought him a lot of presents as grandmas do.
Right.
And she played with she stayed with Beatrice, her daughter, over the holidays, his mom. Mm-hmm. So Richard also wanted to go to his mother Beatrice's house and hang out with everyone for Christmas because he's like, okay, look at me. I'm telling you I want a job. Let me over, right? Mm-hmm. I just did a little shimmy, but I'm nobody regular can see it. Now.
Can't everybody see that I'm a regular
this
dude?
This is the little Richard shimmy.
Oh, what the heck.
But Beatrice wasn't really liking that idea. I mean, if you recall in the last episode, he basically maniacally butchered her cat right outside of her door.
Oh yeah, with remember a shotgun.
That? And jeez acted Louise. All crazy and cut it open and all
what
that.
A psycho.
And then also his sister Pamela was terrified of him. He killed the family dogs, two of them. And not to mention all the other weird shit that he did.
Dude, that's a no-go. This is a holiday.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No. So he was told that he was not invited.
Yeah.
He repeatedly called the house, begging to join them, but his mom said no.
Good.
So apparently, according to Richard later, it was this rejection that made him finally snap.
Oh, my God. As if he hadn't snapped.
You were already snapped.
Yeah. Like...
Frankly, to me, all the stuff that's going to happen, he's been leading up to this for a long time. And I think there was some planning involved, too. So that's not snapped.
No.
So on December 26th, he, you know, feeling so rejected, he went and purchased an extra box of ammunition. Mm-hmm. On December 29th, with his loaded gun in the car, Richard drove aimlessly around Sacramento. And this was basically a practice run for him. A completely random killing of someone because basically he wanted to see what it felt like.
Oh, we've seen this in previous stories.
Right. So he ended up in East Sacramento, which we already know is a nice little quaint suburb. And he saw a family that had just returned home from a shopping trip unloading groceries from their car. Ambrose Griffin, which is such a great name, was an engineer with the Federal Bureau of Land Management.
That's such a rich name.
I know. Ambrose Griffin. I just feel like he was a really awesome guy, too.
He has a side part, for sure, and like a sweater vest.
I know. I mean, and it's the 70s, so yeah. I just love that name. Ambrose was a friendly, he was easygoing, he was a family man for sure. Well, Richard, being the absolute disgusting human that he is, saw Ambrose outside and decided, that's my guy. I'm going to kill this guy. So driving by the front of the house, he shot 51-year-old Ambrose Griffin in the chest while getting his fucking groceries out of the car.
Just in a drive-by?
Rolled
his window down and shot him?
Yep. That's exactly what he did.
Okay.
So as Richard drove off, Ambrose's wife, Carol Griffin, was inside and she heard him kind of make a sound. She didn't really hear a gunshot, though, but heard him make a sound. And she ran outside and she shouted to her two sons to call the ambulance. But she didn't really know why he collapsed. Was he having a heart attack? You know, I mean, it was one of those things. And they didn't even really know he'd been shot till the paramedics got there. And
I wonder, did he have a silencer on his gun?
I don't think he had a silencer. I think it was just one of those things maybe they didn't, it just wasn't heard.
Weird. A gunshot's really loud.
I know. Or she just didn't recognize what it was.
Yeah, maybe.
You know? So anyway, when the paramedics came, he'd been shot and he died on the scene.
Oh, that's sad.
So a possible lead came when Bob, which is Ambrose's youngest son, called the police to report a suspicious man that his brother Rick had seen carrying a rifle near their home. Just like walking around with a rifle. So they assumed this was the guy. And they were so pissed when they saw him walking around because they were like, you just shot my dad. So they actually followed this guy and cornered him, which doesn't sound very smart, but they did. Mm-hmm. And they ended up calling the police. And when the police came and took this man and questioned him, they looked at his rifle and they pretty much figured this could not be the murder weapon because he had a .30-30 caliber hunting rifle. And Ambrose had been killed by a .22 caliber pistol. Mm-hmm. So also this man had been employed at a nearby gas station and he was not in the area at all when this shooting had happened.
Oh, so they just citizens arrested an innocent guy.
But
can I just walk around with my gun?
I know. I was going to say, apparently in the 70s, it was so wild. People were just walking around with guns willy-nilly.
Like, in other states, people are, not California.
I guess. Maybe the 70s California was a little different.
Yeah.
So as police were investigating the murder of Ambrose Griffin, a 12-year-old came forward with his mother and told them that he was out riding his bike on Marconi Avenue on the same day that Ambrose Griffin was killed. And a man in a brown Pontiac Trans Am drove by and shot at him. Can you believe that? The shot missed and it actually hit a window of a store behind him, shattering the window. But he fell off his bike. He was so scared, and he got the hell out of there, luckily.
But he got the description of the vehicle.
He got the description of the vehicle. He hadn't seen much of the driver, though, only that he had been a brown-haired male, likely in his 20s.
What a punk to shoot out a window.
Can you believe it?
At least walk up to somebody and kill him if you're going to kill him.
Right, and I think he saw that it was some kind of shot, like handgun. Hmm. He saw that. So it was a very vague description, though, but you know, with the story of the brown Trans Am, at least they had something. Okay, right. Well, now we know it, there could have been a brown Trans Am involved. So in the 70s, apparently, hypnosis was like the new thing. Oh. And
I don't know where you're going with this.
I'm just saying, like, cops like to use it. So they cops used it back then for witnesses. Okay. And so it was kind of like a new thing that they thought was pretty cool. So they actually placed this little guy, this little 12-year-old, under hypnosis. Aww. And he did remember a license plate number.
Oh, wow.
But when they ran the numbers, they had no hits. And they did all these different variations of it, you know, but they couldn't figure it out.
So just like to find repressed memories.
Yes, that's why. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate it is. Yeah. Cool. But I think there has been some things that have come out under hypnosis that are very accurate. So it just, I think it's really about relaxing a person and then they recall certain memories.
Yeah.
So, but this didn't help at all. But I thought it was really sweet that he was willing to try and his mom was willing to do that. So on January 9th, 1978, a more promising lead surfaced when detectives came across a routine police report that had been filed on December 27th, 1977, 2 days before Ambrose Griffin was murdered. Dorothy Polensky, who lived on Lynn Avenue, which was just a few blocks from Ambrose's house, reported a shot that had been fired into her home. It happened around 6:30 in the evening, and Dorothy had just finished having dinner and was doing the dishes. Really? Asshole. And she suddenly heard, like, a sharp noise, and then the kitchen window broke, like, basically sending shards of glass into her. Oh, and something fast – she felt something fast and hot, like, above her head, and she had, like, a really thick bun on the top of her head, and, like, it went through her bun.
So he just missed her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And luckily she wasn't hurt, but she had actually called and made this report, but they didn't really find anything at the time. But when the investigators saw this report, they actually went back to her and wanted to talk to her again. And she let them in and they did their search, and the bullet was actually in one of her cupboards. Yeah, so it had actually gone through one of the cupboards and it was hard to see, and it was hidden behind cups and dishes. And it was still intact. Like, the bullet was still intact.
Wow.
So it was a single bullet embedded in the wood back there.
So compare.
Yeah. So they dug that out, bagged it up, brought it back to the crime lab for testing. Which also, basically, Richard was just flying around town for days just, you know, shooting shit.
Random stuff.
Yeah. That's what he was doing. You know, why? Because his family wouldn't allow him over for dinner? No. That's not why, Richard. That's not why.
Because you're a straight-up psycho.
Yes. So,
and also, yes, with the foreshadowing and the planning.
Yes.
Not a psychotic break. You've been at this for literally days.
I know.
And you are, like, testing the waters and planning to do something.
Exactly.
Like, I don't buy it.
I know. I know. Lieutenant Ray Biondi was in charge of the investigation. And when the bullet from Dorothy's house was tested, he realized it was a match to the bullet that killed Ambrose Griffin. So they knew this is the same guy who's driving around being a wackadoo.
Yeah, what the fuck?
But since these were all so random, this wasn't much help because nobody's connected. Dorothy doesn't know Ambrose. You know, this little 12-year-old kid doesn't know anyone. Yeah, it's all very random, which makes it very difficult to investigate. Right.
If they were, like, all people that one person knew, then you could narrow it down or something.
Exactly. But exactly. Richard was high as a kite after killing Ambrose. Oh, he was really proud of himself. On January 5th, 1978, he purchased a copy of the Sacramento Bee that featured an article about Ambrose Griffin's killing, which he circled. And later, police would find that Richard would keep all kinds of newspaper articles, and he circled all kinds. He just thought he was the shit.
I hate that. That's why I hate that we talk so much about mass murders, like, in the news after it happens.
Yeah.
They put up the picture. Everybody knows his name. It's like, oh, I wish we wouldn't do that.
I know. Show me the – I want to see the victims. I want to hear about the victims.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree with you. I think it's important to talk about things that happen because I think it's important that things aren't repeated and you can see cycles and you can see when someone's escalating, which I think the boat was missed, like, 30,000 times with Richard.
Honestly.
But I agree with
that. It's not like – I don't know that it's necessarily idolizing them, like, when they put them
sometimes on. Sometimes they are, though.
Sometimes they are.
I mean, there's a reason that
they're, like, getting, they're famous, you know?
They're getting marriage proposals in prison.
It's gross.
That's disgusting.
I hate it.
Stop. Just stop it if you're listening to this. I don't. Don't do that.
Don't do it.
Just don't.
That's not what this podcast is. So if you're one of those people.
No, not at all.
You're not going to get that from us.
No. Okay. Let me see. Where was I?
Sorry, I threw you off.
No, that's okay. Oh, yeah. So he liked to get his newspaper articles. He actually would circle crimes that he was part of, but also I think other crimes that probably helped inspire him.
Oh, great.
If that's the right word.
Yeah.
He was really paranoid his neighbors were watching him. On January 6th, he went into the parking lot at the Watt Avenue apartment complex, which where he lived, and he set a bundle of newspapers on a shelf and then set those papers on fire.
Okay.
And he was hoping that this flame would drive away the neighbors that he was convinced were spying on him. So he's still doing really weird stuff. Oh, yeah,
that's
going
to draw less attention to you, you idiot.
Yeah. Well, luckily nobody was hurt. So that's good.
They're like, oh, yeah, this guy definitely wants us to go away and stop looking at him with this literal fire that he started.
Yeah. And I mean, the amount of things that he does in one day is just mind-boggling. So he's
got a lot of time. He's got no job.
I guess so. You're right. So he sets this stuff on fire. That same day, he broke the window of the Nelson family residence in Watt Avenue, crawled in through the broken window, and set fire to the curtains and ran off. Why? Nobody knows. By the time the fire department arrived, the flames had spread to the carpet and a speaker cabinet.
Bro.
Again, nobody was harmed. And guess what? He actually started speaking to his mother again, and she let him in her house.
That's
smart. And he still went on to commit disgusting, horrific acts of murder. So his original story is BS.
Yeah. Your triggering event might look good on paper, but it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. On January 23rd, 1978, after hiking with his father that morning and collecting rocks. Okay. So you're obviously having connection with people.
Yeah.
He decided to go home and just start entering other people's houses, walking around their backyards. He was doing some severely wacky shit. He stood creepily at a woman's sliding back door, which is always my biggest fear. I always feel like there's just going to be someone trying to come in my back door all the time.
Nobody's seen it in my back door.
Well, luckily she had it locked and closed, but he was just standing there staring at her while she was in her house. And then he ran off. And she didn't call the police at that time because she was like, well, I don't know if it's really against the law for him to be skulking around backyards. Yeah, it is. He shouldn't be in your backyard.
It's against the law.
He ransacked several homes in the area and even went into a child's bedroom in one of these homes, urinated all over the clothes in her dresser, and defecated in the bed.
Okay.
Yeah, so actually the family came home from the grocery store.
And they're like, what the fuck?
Well, they heard him in the house. Which is actually very frightening.
Yeah.
But he ended up running off. And then they called the police because they were scared. And they didn't notice all this other stuff till the police got there. That he had done all this other wacky stuff.
Oh my gosh. This is the exact reason why we have so many security cameras at our house.
It's a good reason.
I get alerted every time someone walks down our sidewalk.
Good.
On my phone.
I like it.
So don't even think you're coming to my doors, my back doors, or my front doors, or the side doors, or the garage doors.
Oh, she prepared,
We ready for you.
But this was the 70s.
I know. Cameras weren't like a... I mean, they were a thing.
Yeah, but not...
Like closed circuit cameras.
Yeah, I feel like people in their own homes just...
No.
You know,
and they just like left their doors unlocked and stuff.
Yeah, it was just different. So after he did this weird stuff in this home, he went to the Market Pantry, which used to be in Town and Country Village Shopping Center.
Oh.
He saw an old classmate while he was there by the name of Nancy Holden, and he was like trying to chat her up. She was pretty disgusted, but she was trying to be polite because you know how us women do. Guess what? If you're freaked out or your gut tells you,
just start screaming.
It's okay not to be polite.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay.
Oh, I just act like super crazy.
Yeah, just leave. Run. Well, which, I mean, she did.
Yeah.
Okay. So he creeped her out so badly that she went to just pay and leave. I mean, I'm surprised she even paid. I think she was trying to, I would have just been like, bye. So she paid and he basically was like, hey, I need a ride. She said, no, sorry.
Yeah,
fuck no can off. Do. He followed her out to her car. And she started, she was so creeped out, she started running to her car because she was like, I don't know what you're doing, dude. Like, leave me alone. Even though we quote unquote, know each other from high school. Mm-hmm. She knew there was something very wrong with him, and he looked very
different. Yeah, guys, go look at the pictures. He looked so scary.
Well, if you, and I'm going to post a picture of his high school picture. It is not even the same person. Swear to you. His high school picture, he just looks like a nice guy.
Like a regular kid.
Like a regular kid, like kind of good looking. I mean, yeah,
he looks like a scary demon.
So that's why I think when he saw people from high school, they thought, oh, hey, it's Richard. But then she realized that there was something very wrong here. Oh,
okay, I see.
Yeah, so she threw her groceries in the car as fast as she could, got in, locked the doors. He chased her to the car and was trying to open the door, but she sped off. She was
good.
So good on you, Nancy. I know, good job. So after leaving the store, Richard walked to Tioga Way, which was only a few blocks from his apartment building. And he walked directly to a house on Tioga Way. I'm not going to give addresses because I think it's weird.
Yeah.
Even though the book has addresses in it, but I'm just...
Unnecessary.
It's unnecessary. There was a blue van parked in the driveway, so he thought maybe more than one person might be home. But when he looked through the window, he saw only a pretty young woman by herself. Okay. The woman, Teresa Wallen, had just been at the market pantry to cash a check. So most likely he saw her there.
Oh.
I'm not sure if he somehow...
Maybe you just recognized the van or something?
I don't know. It's unclear how he chose her.
Hmm.
So he might have seen her there. He might have somehow followed her. He might have just wandered and you're right. He could have recognized the van. Or I don't even know if she had that van because it was her husband's van. It's very unclear how he...
Maybe it was just a coincidence. Like a random...
Maybe.
Coincidence?
I don't know. I still feel like he targeted her somehow.
Hmm.
So she, Teresa Wallen, was beautiful. I'm going to post a picture of her. She had blue eyes, brown hair. She was a sweet, cheerful person, and she'd recently gotten a job with the state. She was a newlywed, and she and her husband had a cute little home there on Tioga Way that she loved to take care of and clean. So Richard pulled out his gun, which was a .22 caliber semi-automatic handgun that had been, like, perfectly concealed. He'd had this under his orange parka this whole time. This is what's really weird to me. Yeah. He cocked the weapon and unloaded a single bullet, which he left in the mailbox. And I have no idea why he did that. There's zero explanation for this.
Okay.
But the door was unlocked because, I leave the door unlocked a lot if you just come in from doing stuff and you're doing other things. But don't do that. Just lock your doors all the time.
I'm like a psycho about it.
I know. I am too now. So... He just walked in. He came face to face with 22-year-old Teresa Wallen. She'd spent the day cleaning and running errands and had been right in the middle of taking out the kitchen's garbage. Normal shit people do every day of their lives. She was headed to the front door when it suddenly swung open and there was Richard. He actually entered her house and just like immediately fired twice. The first bullet went through the palm of her right hand and went through her forearm and out her elbow, hitting her in the head. The second bullet went through her cheek and broke her jawbone.
Yikes.
So after she had fallen, Richard approached her and basically got down on his knees and he shot her a third time at close range into her brain. So he just basically walked in and just like boom, boom, boom.
Executed her immediately.
Yep, he did. So once he was certain that she was dead, he grabbed her by the shoulders and dragged her to one of the house's three bedrooms, leaving a thick trail of blood across the floor. But he needed to be careful because he wanted that blood.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So he didn't want to waste it.
I hate this guy.
You're going to hate him more.
Oh, God.
He needed a way to keep as much of the blood as possible. So when he was looking around the house, he found a large spoon. And from the pile of garbage Teresa dropped, he dug out an empty yogurt cup
and used that.
I know, I'm sorry.
Ugh.
So later that night, Teresa's husband would return home from work and find his wife in the master bedroom. Okay, it's getting graphic, guys. Okay, yeah. I'm just letting everyone know. She lay on the floor and she was almost completely naked. Her sweater had been pulled up to expose her breasts and her pants and underwear were around her ankles. Her legs were splayed apart, exposing her. Her eyes were wide open, and her tongue had been pulled out of her mouth. Her internal organs had been removed and sat upon her open abdomen. One of her nipples had been sliced off. She had been cut from sternum to her hip, and it had been done with so much force that both of her sternum and her breastplate were, like, hacked wide open. Teresa's autopsy found that she most likely had not been raped, but that the position of the organs suggested that whoever the killer was had basically explored or played with her insides. The knife had been thrust so deeply into her abdomen that it hit the base of the spinal column. Now, her intestines had not been damaged, but the membrane and tissue connecting them had been severed, likely to get the organs out. The spleen had been completely cut out of her body and was lying on her. Her stomach and liver had been cut with the knife, and hacking at the membrane connecting the intestines pretty much gave him access to her kidneys. One of them was nearly cut in two, while the other had been torn out and placed inside her chest. Her heart and her diaphragm were punctured, and the lower portion of one of her lungs had been sawed off. Okay, now I'm going to kill you with this information. She was 3 months pregnant.
Oh, God.
Yes. That autopsy also found that.
Oh, my God.
So on the ground around her body, there was a pencil, a book of matches, this blood-stained yogurt cup, lots of blood, but there were no fingerprints. And you know why? Because this asshole probably wore gloves. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't show forethought, I don't know what does.
Yeah.
They did find shoe prints in the yard. So neighbors came forward to say that they had seen this very suspicious man wandering around the neighborhood earlier. And he basically was dirty, skinny. He was a dirty, skinny white guy dressed in a bright orange parka, which doesn't really say much about anything. I mean, it's a very vague description.
Mm-hmm.
Another neighbor, this time a mother, actually came forward and told the police that her 5-year-old daughter had seen a large knife in a nearby storm drain.
Okay.
So they took that knife. At first, cops thought she was killed by one of her husband's jealous ex-girlfriends. I guess he had some crazy ex that was, like, kind of stalkerish. But they ruled that out.
That goes beyond stalker.
That goes way beyond. I mean, I've seen it happen, but that is, you're right.
Yeah.
Anyway, they ruled her out. She didn't do it. So cops continued to work on Teresa and Ambrose's case, which didn't even seem to be connected at first. But in the month of January 1978, there was a lot of homicides that year. And guess who else was very active that year? The East Area Rapist, a.k.a. the Golden State Killer.
Oh.
Yes. And as we know, he remained unidentified until 2018.
Right.
So he had committed his 28th rape the month prior to this. So tensions were really high around Sacramento. There's a lot of shit going on, apparently.
Right. Did they at some point think that it was the Golden State Killer?
I think at some point they thought everything. There is even mention at some point they thought it might even be the part of the Manson family that was doing this based on some of the injuries and things like that. But it wasn't, obviously.
Yeah.
So the day after he murdered Teresa, Richard was seen skulking around another neighborhood, peering in windows. His orange parka wasn't, like, really the best undercover garb, dude. So he's an idiot.
What an idiot.
He spent the day knocking on doors and asking for magazines. Because he wanted to, you know, see if he can get more information on his own crimes and you know, circle it and see what a great guy he was.
Fucking weirdo.
So the following day, on January 25th, detectives interviewed Daniel Owens and his wife, who had sold Richard a pair of Labrador puppies a few months earlier. The couple basically told the details of the transaction and recalled that after he bought these two puppies, they later went out to their back patio and discovered one of the dogs was away from the litter and it was dead, and it had not died naturally. It had been shot in the head and its belly had been ripped open. Its organs, including the kidneys, were pulled out of its body. And when they sent the dog for an autopsy, they learned that it had not only been tortured, but some of the organs had been taken, like removed and taken, which, you know, he ate them.
Right.
So
it's his favorite thing.
They also found that there was 22 caliber bullets embedded in this dog. And so they were thinking this is starting to connect a little bit. The cops were starting to get a picture here, but not fast enough, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were spread kind of thin at this
point.
They're
spread a little thin in 1978. Yeah. Yeah. So on Friday, January 27th, 36-year-old Evelyn Miroth was home with her 6-year-old son, Jason, and was also babysitting her nephew, 22-month-old David Michael Ferreira. So Evelyn was a sweet and happy woman, and her neighbors loved and trusted her to babysit from time to time. She was very popular in the neighborhood. And when I post a picture of her, you're just going to, I don't know, she looks so warm and welcoming. Like, I feel like I just want to have a cup of coffee with her. She just looks so nice. I could see why she was like the neighborhood babysitter, mm-hmm. you know. Her son, Jason, she was also a single mother of 2 boys. Her son, Jason, who was the littlest one, was going up to the snow with some neighbors that day. And that morning, Evelyn's boyfriend, Daniel Meredith, who was 52, also came over to the house. So the story really was that the neighbor was going to take little Jason up to the snow with her kids that day, but he needed a snowsuit. So they were waiting for the store to open so that Evelyn could go get him the snowsuit.
Right.
Okay. That's why they didn't leave earlier. Yeah. When Jason never showed up to the neighbor's house and the time came and went, the neighbor got concerned and I guess knocked on the door, wasn't getting anything, and thought, well, this is odd. This is not like Evelyn to be like this.
Yeah.
So she was speaking with another friend and neighbor by the name of Nancy Turner. And Nancy went to Evelyn's back door, which was actually unlocked. And she knocked and entered. And she found Daniel Meredith, Evelyn's boyfriend, on the floor covered in blood. So she just left the house, called the cops.
Right. Smart.
Yeah. So when police entered, they found Daniel in the hallway. He had lost a lot of blood. There were 2 bullet wounds to his head. There was a trail of blood that led to the bathroom. The bathroom floor was completely covered in blood, and the tub was full of bloody water. Evelyn Miroth was in the master bedroom. She was undressed. Her legs were left wide open. She had been eviscerated from her sternum down to her hip. Her organs had been pulled out of her abdominal cavity, and there were ring-like stains and blood all around her. So this is very reminiscent.
Mm-hmm.
So Lieutenant Ray Biondi, who's in charge of this, and his team began to collect evidence from around the house, and they found bloodstains and a cigarette butt on the ground in the living room. They found .22 caliber bullets on the floor and a footprint in the soil matching the ones found at the Wallen home. And remember, that was just a few days earlier.
Right.
They found the same kind of footprint at the Miroth house.
Well, and the memory has to be so, I mean, that is not a thing you forget ever. So the memory has to be pretty fresh.
Because it was just a few days ago.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And Danny, her boyfriend, his red station wagon was actually missing from the driveway because the neighbors had seen it there. And now that morning, and now it's gone. Hmm. They couldn't find the red station wagon. Interestingly, both Teresa and Evelyn had been mutilated, but Danny was not. He was still fully dressed. He was just shot and left there.
So, was he alive? He was dead.
No, okay. He was dead, but he wasn't mutilated. It's like he mutilated women.
Well,
you know.
He seemed to have an okay relationship with his dad.
That's true. His body... his body was intact, basically, is what I'm saying. Okay. Aside from
he was killed,
being shot. But... Yeah. So the autopsy later revealed that unlike Teresa, Evelyn had been sexually assaulted. Semen was found within her rectum. So he raped her.
Hmm.
And he's a sadist.
Right.
We know this. Because remember, apparently he couldn't get it up.
Right.
Oh, he can get it up when there's enough violence.
Right.
So she had been anally raped with one of the 2 butcher knives that they found beside her with such force that the inside of her buttocks had been cut open.
Jesus.
There were 2 cuts to her rectal wall and her uterus had been severed in 6 different parts. Her abdomen had been cut open with a cross-shaped incision. Her liver had been cut out. And also, like with Teresa Wallen, the membranes connecting her organs had been severed. A large portion of her intestines was outside of her body, as was her stomach.
I can see now why you didn't want to eat breakfast this morning.
I had a hard time. Couldn't eat the yolk. Sorry, sweetie.
No.
Yeah, breakfast was served to me, which was very sweet, and I could not finish it.
Oh,
and this
God.
Was, yeah, I couldn't. It's. I'm telling you, this is a rough one. It's very, very rough. So Postmortem wounds included 8 superficial cuts to her neck and 1 along the inner corner of her eyelid, which had been inverted. Evelyn's right eye had been pulled out of her socket.
Fuck.
So he is a complete, I don't even want to call him an animal because I feel like that's just insulting all the animals of the world. He is a monster.
He's a fucking demon.
He's a demon. That's exactly right. He's an absolute demon. I mean, he's what nightmares are made of, for real.
Yeah, absolutely.
So on the bed, which let me say, the police did not even find this sweet little baby at first because they were so focused on the carnage. But on the master bedroom lay 6-year-old sweet little Jason. He had been shot with a .22 caliber bullet. Not mutilated.
Because he's a boy.
Well, I don't know. There was also no sign of 22-month-old David, who she was babysitting.
Okay.
Missing.
And no sign of the red station wagon. Okay.
Neighbors provided a description of Richard, whom they had seen in the neighborhood. Though they didn't know it was Richard, but they did this whole, like, this is
creepy
a...
Creepy white guy,
blah, blah,
orange
blah.
Orange parka,
exactly. Yeah. So, Lieutenant Ray Biondi, who had actually received some special psychological training by the FBI, helped make a psychological profile of the killer, which was kind of a new thing, I think, back then.
That's cool.
Or maybe that started in the 60s. I don't know. Nobody quote me. Remember?
I think it was the late 60s.
Okay, thanks.
But they weren't, like, experts. I don't even think now they're really experts, but...
I think they're more expert now, though.
Well, yeah, obviously, but...
By now, everyone was certain that the suspect was a young white male... Obviously, who neglected both hygiene and grooming. He likely suffered a severe mental illness, which they determined not only due to the severity of the crimes, but also due to the fact that they had all been carried out in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like he was really under cover of darkness here.
No.
He left behind footprints and cigarette butts that could be used to tie him to the murders, and even left the knives out in the open.
So, yeah, he's completely reckless.
He's reckless, but still, there's forethought here.
Yeah.
Unlike most killers, he seemed to do very little to conceal what he had done. This man was probably a sexually frustrated and an incompetent loner without a stable job or close, meaningful relationships. The crimes he had committed, as horrific as they were not sophisticated. It was the profile of what came to be known as a disorganized killer.
Hmm.
And it's actually still used by law enforcement and the FBI to this day, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah.
So this was kind of the start of that. A description went out of Richard and reports started coming in. On January 28th, 71-year-old Retta Scott called to report an incident where she nearly collided with an erratic long-haired man driving a red station wagon while she was leaving a department store.
Okay.
This had taken place at the intersection of El Camino and Marywood Drive, which was Evelyn Miroth's neighborhood.
Okay.
Okay. So cops tracked the gun to the Big Five sporting goods store where Richard bought it. Which they couldn't really track it to him specifically, I guess just based on like the documentation that was done back then.
Mm-hmm.
And also it happened at Christmas, so the records weren't as great, which is really frightening to me. But they did track it there to Big Five. Danny Meredith's car was eventually found abandoned within the area of the Sandpiper apartment complex, which was a few miles from Teresa and Evelyn's neighborhoods. Another breakthrough in the case came on the morning of January 28th when two detectives, Bill Roberts and Carol Daly, who had been assigned to look into the backgrounds of Richard's victims, got a call from a retired county marshal. He told them about an incident that involved a creepy man and his daughter-in-law by the name of Nancy Holden. So remember Nancy, who was at the market pantry and ran to her car?
Yeah.
This is Nancy. So her father-in-law was actually a retired county marshal. She decided to report the sighting, at his urgency. He said, mm-hmm. Go do this. After she noticed that Richard bore a very strong resemblance to the police sketch that was going around.
Orange parka, hello.
Orange parka. So two detectives tried to pay Richard a visit at his apartment. But instead, they were met by a man named Gerald Barringer. So Gerald had only been living in apartment number 12 for about 2 weeks, and he'd never met Richard. So they were like, okay, well, this isn't him. Discouraged, they left. They were unaware that Richard was actually just three doors down. Mm-hmm. He was actually number 15 because if you remember, he actually left for a time. And then when he came back, he moved back into the apartments, but in a different number. But the old number was still on his information.
Right.
So interestingly, Wayne Irie, who was an officer assigned to the task force for the East Area rapist, was really interested in Nancy Holden's story. So he called her later that same day and asked her for more details on what happened at Market Pantry. She told him Richard wore blue jeans, black tennis shoes, and a bright orange parka.
Unforgettable.
Unforgettable. And so Irie was like, yeah, this is our dude.
Yeah.
We're connecting some
pretty... We just have to find him.
Major dots now. Yeah. Detective Bill Roberts later searched through the police records for anything that mentioned Richard Chase. He found that Richard had had a number of arrests from the late 1960s and early 1970s. Most were charges for drug possession, but in 1968, he had been arrested for as a suspect in a shooting. In 1973, Richard had faced a concealed weapons charge, so I guess you couldn't have concealed weapons back then. And 3 years later, he was arrested after he escaped from the psychiatric ward at the American River Hospital. Remember that?
Yeah, fun.
Yeah. So it was actually the 1977 Pyramid Lake arrest that we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
That helped break the case.
Which is crazy because it's a whole nother county, different state.
Right. Because Richard's information in this arrest revealed he had moved into apartment number 15. So now they know where he was.
Nice.
Irie called the DMV's law enforcement department and ordered recent photographs and fingerprints of Richard Trenton Chase. His place of residence was listed in this apartment complex on Watt Avenue, apartment number 15. The sketch was eerily similar. And it was funny because it was similar, but he didn't have the mustache and the goatee. And so he drew it on there to see what it looked like. And he was like, dude, it's the same guy. It's the same guy. So Irie went to Ray Biondi, the investigator in charge, and gave him all this information he'd gathered. And Nancy Holden's story was like, come on, this is our guy. And at first, Biondi was like, well, I mean, he was curious, but he was not really fully convinced.
He's like, it's not a slam dunk.
He's like, okay, like, this is good, but let's follow up on the lead, but don't get too excited. They go to a Richard's apartment again.
The actual right apartment.
That evening, Officer Wayne Irie, who's obviously a very smart man, went down to the Watt Avenue apartment complex in an unmarked car with Detective Bill Roberts and Ken Baker, who was a new detective who pretty much thought this was a big fat waste of time, by the way. And they knocked on Richard's door with no response. They had no warrant, so they couldn't really get the landlady to open the door. But the next apartment was empty. So she opened that apartment for them, and Detective Ken Baker was able to ascertain, by the high-tech process of sticking his ear to the wall, that Richard was indeed home. He heard him moving around over there. Detective Roberts decided to give Richard a phone call to see if he answered, because, you know, this is the 70s. We don't have cell phones back then. So if he's answering the phone, he's home. The phone rang twice. Richard answered, and Detective Roberts said, "Hey, it's Bill. We met a while ago." And then Richard hung up. But regardless, they knew he was home at that point. They tried to call him back. He didn't answer. So now they had to get him out of the apartment because they don't have a warrant, so they need to get him out. They basically loudly discussed in front of his apartment, like, well, I guess we're going to leave now, guys. And
nothing to see here.
Let's move it along. And so they said they were going to give up and leave. A few minutes later, Richard comes out carrying a McDonald's box, and he's basically blocked by one detective, tries to run, blocked by another detective. He threw the McDonald's box at them, and Detective Baker basically hit him in the head. He's like, we're not doing this. So
he's like, yeah, right, dude.
But even so, he fought them really hard. It took all of them to disarm and cuff him. And they still did not know where baby David was. So they did not really want to, like, kill or incapacitate him because they still need to find this child. So inside Richard's wallet, they found Danny Meredith's driver's license. Well, you can't really explain that one away, can you? Also inside were various cards as well as pictures of Evelyn and Jason Miroth. Oh. Inside the McDonald's box that Richard threw at Baker was a pair of bloody rubber gloves and rags, 22 caliber bullets, a key ring with 16 keys, David Ferreira's diaper pin, and an envelope with brain matter inside of it.
Okay. That's bizarre.
Mm-hmm. So they knew this was it. They had the guy.
Obviously, yeah, the brain matter really.
Yeah, obviously, Wayne Irie was very right mm-hmm. about this. Richard said when they put him in the back, he said, quote, "I haven't done anything. All I did in my apartment was kill a few dogs."
In your apartment?
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
We're not asking about what you did in your apartment.
That's true. Maybe that's technically the truth.
Technically.
All he's, maybe. Well, he killed bunnies too, but in the interrogation, he denied everything. They got the warrant, though, and Detectives Don Habaker and Fred Homan conducted the search of the apartment. There was no baby David there. But the entire place was disgusting.
Oh, I bet.
It stank. There was blood all over the bedroom. There was blood all over the bathroom. There was a big puddle of blood in the kitchen. A blood-stained loaf of bread on the couch. Unwashed dishes they found around the apartment contained blood, as did a cup in the bathroom's medicine cabinet. And then, of course, horrific smelling blender in the kitchen. There were 22.
Oh, God.
Yeah, remember the blender?
You brought the blender back?
Sorry. Jeez. It's still there. There were 22 caliber bullets and bone fragments. Other weapons found in the apartment included a blood-drenched hatchet and a machete. There were bullet holes in the walls and hair in strange places. In the soap and in a little bag in the medicine cabinet.
Hair?
Yeah. Inside the freezer, they found a half-gallon container filled with the meat, kidneys, liver, and heart of an unidentified animal. Okay. There were feces all over the floor of the bedroom.
What?
Yeah, and there were piles of newspapers, articles about recent murders, and ads for free dogs had been circled.
Oh, God.
Which we know why. On the walls were diagrams of human anatomy taken from various medical books. He also had been reading materials on subjects such as totalitarianism. I have a hard time with that
totalitarianism
one. Thank you, that one. Psychics, guns, and the Old West. So okay,
that's weird.
Inside a spiral notebook were sketches of guns and swastikas, as well as the phrase, quote, "My name is Richard Chase. I am 01000 computer. I was sent here from the year 10,000
No thanks, Richard.
Goodbye, Richard.
Yeah, whatever that is or means, we don't care.
We don't care. So this same night, the East Area Rapist, a.k.a. the Golden State Killer, struck again. So he's doing his thing out there, being a disgusting human also. On Richard's first night in the Sacramento County Jail, he had to be placed away from the general population because other prisoners were in a frenzy and they were ready to kill him.
Hey.
They continued to search for little David Ferreira for 6 weeks.
Oh, no.
On February 1st, 1978, they used a bloodhound to search the area around Richard's apartment, and nothing was found. In late March, Oscar Rossau, who was a janitor for the Arcade Wesleyan Church, was making his usual rounds when he discovered a cardboard box behind the grounds of the church. Inside the box was little David. This is hard, guys. He was still wearing Sesame Street trousers, and he had been decapitated.
Oh, my God.
His blonde head was hidden beneath his torso. Keys to Danny Meredith's red station wagon were also in the box. They later determined that some of the blood and gore in the blood-filled tub from Evelyn's house was some of baby David's brain matter that had spilled when Richard hacked open the back of his skull. The autopsy revealed that he had been shot in the right side of the head and stabbed in the back of the neck, creating holes that Richard used to gain access to his brain. His scrotum had been slashed and 7 of his ribs had been broken. And I'm not even completely telling you all of the injuries, because I'm going to stop on that one because Thank it's you. Just too difficult for yeah. me to. That was bad enough.
Yeah.
So the trial of Richard Trenton Chase began in 1979. So the defense asked for a verdict of second-degree murder to spare Chase the death penalty, since he was, what they said, clearly insane and never been given proper help. So Trachterman, who was the prosecutor, argued that he was a sexual sadist, a monster who knew what he was doing, and who could not be salvaged.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. On May 8th, 1978, after 5 hours of deliberation, 29-year-old Richard Chase was found guilty of first-degree murder of Ambrose Griffin, Teresa Wallen, Evelyn Miroth, Daniel Meredith, Jason Miroth, and little David Ferreira. During the sanity phase, the judge found Chase legally sane after deliberating for an hour. So it took them 4 hours to decide that he should die by the gas chamber at San Quentin Penitentiary. So that was the outcome of the trial.
Yeah.
On December 26th, 1980, Richard was found dead in his cell by an overdose of hoarded antidepressant medication. Mm. How did that happen? I don't know.
He probably just cheeked it.
He cheeked it. Yeah.
For a while.
He did. So that's how that happened. If you go, actually, I found this really cool website. It's called California Revealed. And if you go to the website, you can see footage of Richard, like, being led from the police. There's really old news footage, which is interesting. There's a bunch of interviews and trial footage.
Hmm.
And it's really interesting also to see, like I said, the pictures of him in high school where he is two different people, it seems like.
Yeah, he looks like a complete maniac.
Yeah. So go to California Revealed and take a look. I didn't even realize that old footage was there. So it was really interesting to watch and, you know, see how the news was back then and the things that they show his apartment.
Oh God.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff. It's pretty cool.
This is like making me sick today.
I'm sorry, but that's the end. That's the Richard Trenton Chase vampire.
Fucking Richard.
Yeah. Vampire of Sacramento killer. And he is thankfully no longer on this earth.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because that is...
He's in hell where he belongs, I'm sure.
And again, the stuff nightmares are made of. For real.
Honestly.
You know?
And like, when I listen to you tell the story, I like legit imagine it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why my brain does this. I always picture what I think the person's face would look like
when they're committing the crime.
While they're doing it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why my brain does that to me. I don't appreciate it. But yeah, just disgusting.
I mean, it's hard to even imagine it. Some things.
Yeah.
That a person could do such horrific things to other people. And especially children.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult for me to wrap my brain around. But yeah. And I honestly didn't even know much about that story.
Mm-mm.
So that's our hometown murder. Oh, great. Or murders.
It was
a doozy.
I don't think we'll ever do the Golden State Killer.
No, I
feel like that story's been told so many times.
It's a great story though. Yeah. And why can't I remember the name of the book? Okay, everyone's screaming it at me right now. I'm so sorry.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, she and then McNamara.
Yeah.
She wrote the book and it's really good. And there was also a special on HBO, I thought. That was right. Of the book. So, yeah. No, that's... I mean, just read that book. Jeez. So good.
Okay. Well, don't forget to lock your doors at night.
Sorry, guys.
If you need recommendations for security cameras, let me know. We've done a lot of research and I have a really good one. So,
yeah. And just... And don't go running with your headphones on, guys. No. That's another one I wanted to say. No. Be aware of your surroundings.
Don't text and walk.
No. Oh my gosh, I heard this terrible story of this poor girl who had her headphones in, had her head down looking at her phone, and walked into a train. Please don't do that.
Oh my God, walked into a train.
She literally, I mean, her headphones must have been on really high.
Okay, one headphone, maybe.
Okay, one headphone.
Like one low headphone.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Not both. looking at your phone.
No.
You need to be aware.
I know.
Because sometimes people are watching you and you don't know.
A lot of times people are watching you and you don't know.
Yes.
I don't like that. Alrighty. Sorry for that one.
We're
today,
gonna go
April.
Recover from this one. I need a pedicure after that.
I know.
I need to freaking... I need
rough.
A second drink.
But thank you guys so much for listening. Let them know where they can find us.
So you can email us at killerspiritspod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you if you want to shoot us a message. You can email us if you have a story you would like to hear or a cocktail you would like us to make. We always love new ideas. We're also on Instagram at killerspiritspod. Where we post pictures of the drink and also pictures from the story you heard today. We're on TikTok at Killer Spirits Pod. Go over there and you can see some show clips and drink videos. And what else? We're on Patreon at patreon.com/KillerSpiritsPod.
Yeah.
And we also have a new Etsy shop.
We have merch, yo.
We have merch, yo. And
rate and review.
Yeah, rate and review us. I just put the aprons and the cosmetic bags up last week.
Yeah, I really want to see. Yeah, review us. We'll read them on air.
Yeah, we love that. Yeah. I love it when you guys reach out to us. It's very cool.
Me too.
I feel like it makes us feel really special.
It actually really does. And we like to feel connected to you. So yeah. That's awesome. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Bye.
Bye.